Hi, everybody. Happy New Year, and welcome back to Hogcast, the official podcast to the 442nd Fighter Wing. I'm Bob Jennings, the Superintendent of Public Affairs, and I'm sitting here with Colonel Mike Rio Leonis, the Wing Commander, and sitting in for Chief Parks this month, who's on a much more important call than this one, is Chief Sal Urbano, the Mission Support Group Senior Enlisted Leader.
Awesome, Sal. Thanks for filling in for Chief Parks. He's actually on the phone with Chief Nunez, the AFRIC Command Chief, talking about some AFRIC-level stuff as they consult Chief Parks on a lot of higher-level things. Thanks for filling in, short notice and stuff like that. So, Bob, it's 2025, but what time is it?
It is 2025, and it's this year's first Babble Time.
This year's first Babble Time. The prize for guessing why Babble Time is named Babble Time is up to $275. God, expected someone to be able to get it with these clues. Went for the first six or so without any clues. The existing clues are Davis Mothin, Bulldogs, Tactical, First, Name, and then the new clue is Mine. M-I-N-E, Mine. For $275, let Bob know why Babble Time is called Babble Time. DM, Bulldogs, Tactical, First, Name, Mine. Anyone in this room is not eligible to win. Sorry, Chief. Sorry, Bob. So we're having our first UTN. What's interesting is we're having our UTA later than some of the units. So some of the units had it right after the new year, and we slid ours a week later to align with a green flag departure. What's going on with CTA? Our tasks are pretty simple. Number one is certify the aviation package, and we're going to drop into that pretty heavy. We're going to have an exercise, generate the airplanes, and then we're going to fly them off to green flag, which the first part of green flag is going to be some, we'll call it challenging training events that have been set up by the Projo Major Bevis. And they're going to do that outside and before the green flag events, but they're going to challenge themselves. And then we go right into green flag and we get back right at the end, right during the February UTA. That's our first task. Second task is the Air Force is still, and so are we, obviously, promoting standards, elevate them at all levels. We're talking from operational standards to tech order use to flight discipline to job standards all the way across to customs and courtesies, dress and personal appearance. We're bringing it all up. So protect the patch. We're still emphasizing that. And we're going to be off station. We're going to be among other people. So Chief, how's that protect the patch going in the MSG?
We hold the standard. We've held the standard from the beginning. We're always checking on our folks, making sure that we look our best in uniform here at Whiteman. And then when we go off base as well, representing the 442nd, wherever we go. So we do hold that standard pretty high here in MSG, just like within the rest of the folks within the 442nd.
Yep, and that I think that shows from the MSG as we're performing extremely well downrange with our ACS package. We're getting some great feedback that we're doing well in all aspects, specifically the civil engineering squadron. We're getting more feedback from them because the whole package went there, but I guarantee every 442nd member is excelling downrange as we always do. That's great. So what's going on this UTA? Obviously, the exercise, it's going to be, we'll call it a hybrid UTA. We're going to be generating aircraft and then the normal UTA duties. And we've got some pretty cool events coming up. Chief, what are they?
We have the induction ceremony happening on Saturday. It'll be in the CE High Bay. This induction ceremony, it's the second iteration of it. It's hosted by the top three and the rising six. So it's where we recognize every single staff sergeant and senior NCO that was promoted throughout the entire year. We start from January of last year all the way to December of this year, and then we hold the ceremony so they can be recognized in front of all of their peers throughout the wing, and they'll be presented a certificate as well. So this will be our second run, like I said, in top three and the rising six of the ones, and we do the charge as well, which is going back to that standards, heritage, and everything else that goes with it.
Absolutely, and the last year was the first time I saw one, and I think you were responsible for setting it up, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Chief, and that was the great thing to bring into the unit that I think we used to do it, but it had been forgotten. And it was an absolute impressive thing to see. Some of the family members came out, but what was more impressive is how many of the wing came out to watch their fellow airmen get recognized as an NCO or senior NCO. I got a pretty good story. Chief Bryant, we'll talk Angela, the mother of the clan. When I had an airman promoted a master sergeant, we were just going to put the rank on and that was it. And she lost her mind. And said, no, this is not just a promotion. This is entering the senior NCO rank structure. This is a big deal. And basically educated Lieutenant Colonel Squadron Commander to make sure that we give the recognition that's due. So it's a great ceremony, absolutely recognizing excellence, which we have all over wing. And I think that's great. Thanks for bringing that to a wing. What else we got going on?
And then some of my favorite things is quarterly awards. So we'll be presenting the third quarterly awards to the recipients this weekend. And then we'll be announcing the fourth quarter winners this weekend as well. In all due time, then the annual packages are due middle of next week. So we'll have those for civilians, first sergeants, undershirts, officers, airmen, NCOs, and senior NCOs. And then they'll compete, and then we'll send some of them up to compete against 10th Air Force and
hopefully Africa.
Africa as well.
Yeah, so the third quarterly award presentation is a month late. And of course, we do the fourth quarter a month early to give white space for the of the year. Yeah, Chief Parks is all about recognizing an airman, and he's hoping to get good success at the of the year award. So commanders and supervisors, make sure you give the right people forward and write good packages. Speaking of awards, we just got announced from AFRIC A4 that one of our airmen received an AFRIC level award, and that's Major Beard. He, from the CE Squadron, he was recognized as the outstanding FGAO of the year for Air Force Reserve Command. So props to him and to that team that's downrange. He's not downrange, but he's back here running the CE Squadron and such. And the official name of this award is the Major General L. Dean Fox Award. So I'm sure that has some significance to the civil engineering world, but huge props, an AFRIC level award. That's pretty awesome. One of the interesting things is Lieutenant Colonel Riker obviously has Major Beard in his unit, but one of the other award winners is his fire chief downrange with him right now, but not a member of our unit. But he was pretty excited because I think he respects that individual. He's helping him out. Awesome recognition to Major Beard. I assume you know him fairly well now that you've come out of the Security Forces Squadron and entered the MSG level SEL position.
Yes, sir. He's a great leader. He's bringing a lot of different knowledge to the CE Squadron, and he's stepping up in that leadership role exceptionally well.
Yep. Awesome. Some things coming up next UTA. We're going to have the Key Support Liaison Appreciation Social. So I'm going to be hitting up the squadron commanders, make sure that roster is up to speed, maybe clean it up a little bit, maybe get some additions. So make sure you're warning the squadron commanders in the pre-beefs that I might need a couple. We got the DEOX back, and I've only been able to debrief the maintenance group, and I consider it fair. That's the best way to describe it. The wing is concerned about our future. Obviously, that's in the maintenance and ops side, but quite honestly, it's creeping in to the support group side. Everybody is super concerned about that because it's just instability. And that was the biggest concern. I'd say almost half of the comments, meaning people were taking the time to write down specific comments and notes, had to do with that or had mentioned that tracking. And that's new news to me. That's obviously high on my priorities as well. Communication was brought up quite a bit. Manning was brought up quite a bit. And then fairness. There's some other things that we're going to take a look at, but those are some, I call them trend items. And then let everybody know that we're aware of it and we're not going to let it sit. And we're going to be trying to fix those things. Appreciate we were upwards about 400% or 40%. Captain Bobby said it was like 441 people filled it out rather than 442. Just one short of our angel number, but
it wouldn't let me fill it out twice.
It wouldn't let you fill it out twice. It wouldn't let me fill it out at all. So I guess I would have gotten it up there. Appreciate everybody putting out with that. I went down to Moody with Chief this weekend because they had their UTA the weekend prior to ours. Weird. Moody took all of Christmas off. We're not talking our Moody. We're talking the active duty. They have not flown. They did not fly an airplane pretty much the second 2 weeks of December, which is baffling to me. And I don't know if you noticed, but they didn't really fly much here as well. So active D kind of takes almost 2 weeks off where we don't. We flew as many days as we could over the Christmas break. And on the Friday, so that would have been the fourth, which is Saturday of January, our 442nd or 476 fighter group fired up the Moody jets for the first time this year and flew them on Saturday and Sunday of their UTA and got some good training. They did a super UTA. It was pretty interesting to go down there and remember the hurricane. We've forgotten about that. We obviously are going to play the second half of Colonel Waring's account of the recovery of the hurricane paired with this, but there's still damage down there. There's trees down. You're looking downtown Valdosta, there's blue tarps on roofs. If you're not on the road, there's brush and down trees in the forest. Way more damage than I think we realize. But they're recovered and they're moving forward. Great team down there. Again, like I said, a four-day UTA. And they had a chili competition. Colonel Waring, his wife's a cook.
So that's why you went down there.
Yeah, I didn't stay for that was on a Sunday. We came back on Saturday. I got stranded with the chief, command chief at Atlanta for 2 days. But they did a chili competition. And I'll throw Colonel Waring under the bus. His wife's a chef, like a professional chef. So he wins all these competitions to the point that it's called Beat the Boss. And Chief Johnson beat him. So you remember Chief Johnson? Right, he was the command chief for Resolute Sentinel. And he decided to cook chili at the last minute and then crush Colonel Waring. And so Colonel Waring cried out loud to me. I'll admit to him. But yeah, so Chief Johnson, correct. Congrats on the chili competition. They won, the 476 won the Moody barbecue competition as well that they have this fall. They obviously they cook well down there. Pretty awesome. And props to listening to what we had to say. And great culture, nice, solid unit that we're really happy to be a part of our week. So, have you ever been down to Rudy?
No, we're myself and Colonel Yersak are scheduled to go down there in February. Okay. After the February UTA, we'll be down there. We fly out early Monday morning, and I believe we'll come back late Wednesday.
I got to see the OLA, the Operation Location Alpha of the FSS. Down at Moody, and they grew. I don't know if you knew, they grew from 6 to about a dozen people down there. I saw Major Welsh, Nate Welsh, yeah, down there, and then some other heavy hitters that used to be up here. Ham Campbell was down there. Always good to see her and just their leadership in the OLA. So strong. Yeah, definitely worth the trip down there, and I'll make sure Waring knows you that you're coming. He'll pick him there for it. All right, so what else is going on? Obviously, we're certifying with the exercise and the fly off to green flag. What's going on in regards to the world? A-10s are active. If you look at open source news, the A-10s are dropping bombs. They actually had a close air support engagement later in December. So they're doing their primary mission, but they're also striking ISIS. I believe since Syria fell, Iran and ISIS are being retracted from the new leadership. They're basically being removed from the new Syria. And the A-10s are absolutely working. Our preparation in regards to going downrange this summer is obviously valid because we're absolutely hammering away at our enemies in that region. So it's pretty neat to see. And again, it's open source. Some other things that happened in December is Chief and I went to the MPEC meeting, and MPEC is the Missouri Military Economic Council. And they're basically, we'll call it advocates for military entities within Missouri. I won't call them lobbyists because the commission is lobbyists, but they certainly employ lobbyists. And it was great to see all aspects of that commission thinking about white. There's a lot of other military assets in our state, but Whiteman was at the tip of everyone's tongue. It was great to see that. We actually got to tour Honeywell, and I was able to see some citizen airmen in their civilian jobs there. They came up and introduced themselves to me, and it was good to see that. But it was absolutely good to see that the state at the government level is concerned about us. Obviously, it's not just an Air Force Reserve Command. It's not just an Air Force issue. It's not just a DOD issue, but it's a state issue to include all the way up to our senior elected officials. The NDA passed. I don't know if you were tracking that, Chief.
I have.
Anything that you'd like to point out in regards to how it helps our airmen? Am I putting you on the spot here?
You are a little bit. The upside is the CR and the NDA came at the perfect time. It gave us a little bit more leeway to push some foreclosure or future items ahead of time. So that's the upside. The budget's a little bit open, and they'll have we'll see what this new party wants to do with this extra time that they're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. The time between the NDA, which is the plan, and the budget or the authorization, which is the budget, is a couple months because the CR got pushed out to March. So that's going to allow the new Congress, which will be all Republican, and the new administration, and maybe influence and maybe change it. That's obviously potentially positive for our future aviation package. But I'll tell you what, this is what it's called, and this is more for our airmen. It's the Service Member Quality of Life and National Defense Authorization Act. So they renamed it Service Member Quality of Life because there's huge, huge changes and help for our airmen. Here's just a couple off the top of my head. A 14.5% pay raise for junior enlisted. Provisions to improve housing, childcare, medical care, spousal support, education, and tuition assistance. And then it goes into, that's all for our airmen. And there's a huge panel that Congress set up that looked for opportunities to help airmen. And they're spending a lot of money this year to help airmen to the fact that they changed the name of it. So we can't only focus on our future vision. We need to focus on what Congress is thinking about and thinking about our airmen and making their lives better, because we know retention is not where it should be. Recruitment is not where it should be. And they're attributing it to the quality of life of our airmen. Huge things. And that's just the top 2% that I pulled from the summary. There's just absolutely volumes of stuff that are focused on our airmen. They also prevented the divestment of 25 F-15Es this year and prohibited any further divestment of the F-15Es through fiscal year 27. Obviously, that is possibly a positive thing for us, as that is.
Is that too soon to call dibs?
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, there's no dibs. Obviously, the senior leadership of the Air Force will determine where those airplanes go. But more airplanes on the table is better for our airplane recap. They did authorize the divestment of the presidential budget requested A-10s. OSON is going to close down this fiscal year. And then Maryland Air National Guard is going to close down this fiscal year. So those are the two squadrons that are losing their A-10s. The Maryland Air National Guard is going to transition to a cyber wing. And they also just received another flying mission in Maryland where they transitioned the DC Air National Guard F-16s at Andrews to actually be a member of the Maryland Air National Guard. So they're going to have a flying mission within the state, which was important to them. But those are, I'd say, the top four highlights in regards to the NDAA. Two airmen, and then one possible positive for us, and then negative for the A-10 enterprise, where we are still continuing to divest. Those are some significant things. They haven't announced the Secretary of the Air Force yet, which is odd, because they've announced Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Navy, Secretary of Army, but no Secretary of the Air Force. So I don't know what's going on, whether they were thinking about retaining Secretary Kendall or not, but there's going to be a leadership change probably. And such. Anyways, those are the things that went on in December. Hopefully everybody had an awesome holidays. The holidays were a lot of time off, a lot of down days. And I hope everybody was able to connect with their family, connect with friends. Chief, did you do anything cool over the holidays?
We didn't do a whole lot, which is sometimes a good thing because I travel 99% of my life. Shit. I got to stay home for about 14 straight days, which was testing the boundaries of my entire family, having reached home for 14 straight days. But it was awesome. We host every holiday.
Awesome.
It was great. New Year's Eve, we were at the house because I don't like driving on those roads.
New Year's at the house as well.
Watch some college football. Watch some more college football on New Year's Day. Notre Dame, of course, got pushed an extra day.
Obviously, some terrorist / strange events in our in regards to our security. But yeah, that was interesting to see those things as well. Bob, what'd you do? Did you do anything interesting?
We took a road trip.
Cool.
We went to the Petrified Forest in the Grand Canyon in Arizona. And then on the way back, we stopped at White Sands in New Mexico.
Awesome.
Fantastic. If you guys don't know, all veterans get lifetime free memberships or passes to all national parks. So definitely take advantage of that because the Petrified Forest is gorgeous. Look, Colonel Leonis is here whipping out some lifetime membership cards.
Lifetime membership. So I got two lifetime memberships because I lost one and it's currently found it. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is a great benefit and you definitely should take advantage of it.
I mean, that's the thing, just the beauty of our country. You know, I talked about last ET, I appreciate this country. When I was talking about our opportunity, the freedoms we have and stuff like that, the natural beauty is something that you took advantage of. Good. Yeah, I went on it. Normally, I go down to Branson and spend some time down there between Christmas and New Year's. This time, we decided to go on an extended vacation, and I'm running the show, so it wasn't relaxed. But we were actually on the beach in South Carolina, And I got to ride my bike, a rain bike on the beach, which was cool. In and out of the surf. The first day I went upwind and it was the most miserable thing I've done. And the next day I checked the wind and went down and it was pretty awesome.
So you went from sand to snow.
Snow to sand, actually. So, and then back to snow again. Yeah, absolutely. Here we are, new year. Hopefully we really enjoyed December and time with family and time off, but we're hitting it hard. Certification. This is, and certification is not supposed to be easy. This is, the next 3 months are probably the hardest 3 months that we've had for the aviation package in a long time. Keep it safe and do it well. And I'll always like to end with leave well, train hard, and ready now. Who's following me? Bob, who's the meat of the podcast?
All right, coming up, we have the second half of our interview with Colonel Waring about the hurricane recovery and the great things the Vanguards did down there post-hurricane.
Absolutely. They did a great job. So ding how to them, and see you out and about in January ETN.
Crazy. So I remember receiving your data, and I think the only help I gave you is maybe some safety advice. I said, hey, Zero, make sure people aren't trying to become loggers and cut down these 6-foot trees because they can kill you quickly, and stay clear of the power lines because people get maybe excited and wanting to help and could get themselves in trouble. And luckily, no one got hurt or anything like that helping out. So some other observations I remember you made, you talked about the pet observation, but you talked about people were pretty much prepared for 48 hours without power. Is that a true observation, or do you have anything to elaborate on that?
No, I think that is. And I use my family as a personal example for that. Last hurricane hit, we didn't even have a generator, but power was only off for 2.5, maybe 3 days. This time it was closer to 5 or 6, and some people for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we had the generator this time. My wife was prepared with meals. We knew we'd be able to keep the one of the refrigerators running, and we had some portable cooking stuff. So she had meals thought out, but after 48 hours, you get real tired of eating the same thing. And luckily, some local communities up further north were starting to return to normalcy. So I thought it was like being deployed. By that time, we had the internet back up, and yeah, you're eating the same thing every day, but hey, you got a roof over your head. Things are fine. You're working hard to help people. But we've been through survival school, and we've been through that type of training and that kind of deployment situation where you know how to live in a uncomfortable situation. Most people don't ever get that kind of thing, and you strip away normalcy of life, and after 48 hours, it really starts to grate on you. And we saw that a lot with the community as well. Once we got out and we started working in the points of distribution, we saw the tempers were really high. We were well prepared in terms of stocking up gasoline for the generators, so we didn't have to be running out right away. The cars were all gassed up. So preparation really helped with that. But you hear every day as the news started to come back online, fights breaking out, tempers. Before the guard showed up, the first pod that we worked at, Air Force OSI from Moody was there helping out, and then a few of us, and then the security forces folks showed up for the night shift. Nobody was in uniform at that time, but everybody there was armed. And that kind of, it's the South, everybody carries, but it caught my attention that everybody is open carrying and tempers are hot at this time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's about the best way you can describe it. It was interesting. Nothing happened, but you did start to hear about the tempers and the fight and people really starting to get on each other's nerves downtown. So there was always the kind of thought of, hey, keep your head on a swivel and watch what's going on. Watch for things, because you get that first pod, one guy who was operating the forklift, for whatever reason, we had one emergency management guy who was in charge of the pod, and he's a micromanager, and we didn't care. Slobo and I were just, hey, we'll do whatever you need. We're moving pallets, and made friends with a kid from Afghanistan who was a truck driver, which is another funny story. But next thing you know, while we're in this truck moving double stack pallets of MREs, we hear all this shouting outside, and we look around the pallets out of the truck, and two pallets of MREs are toppled over and spilled across the ground, and this guy is like yelling and screaming, and he runs, jumps in his truck, and leaves.
This is the pod manager?
No, the guy who's driving the
forklift. Okay. Yeah, the forklift driver took off?
Yeah, and so now we've got half a semi-trailer full of MRE pallets plus tarp pallets plus ice pallets that got to be moved and no forklift driver.
Yeah, how'd you solve that problem?
So the first thing, the truck driver from Afghanistan, which is, you know, a funny story in itself of how we got to know him, but he jumped in, starts operating them, and we get his truck all the way unloaded. But then he's got to leave. Hey, my truck's unloaded. I've got to go get the next batch. So Slobo and I look at each other, and Slobo shrugs his shoulder, and being the machine that he is, he's, I'll give it a go. So he jumps in, figures it out, starts doing some on-the-job training, and next thing you know, Slobo is a qualified forklift operator.
Yeah, Slobo is Lieutenant Colonel Adam Radican. He's a former 75th or 76th Fighter Squadron down at Moody, but he's born and bred right here from the 303rd Fighter Squadron. He was hired as a baby or as a reservist, and he's obviously progressed well up. And yeah, he is a machine, and he saved the day at the pod. We'll get into the pods a little bit more, but accountability was a mess. You basically had probably 100% accountability early Saturday. I think you were missing someone who was actually in the Moody command post. So that person was just very secure, just we didn't track that they're in there. But bottom line, we reported 100% accountability, I'd say afternoons of Saturday. But the Air Force accountability system, AFPAS, severely lagged. And it lagged because you didn't have cell service. You didn't have the ability to update that. And by Tuesday, you know, I knew and I reported that you're 100%, but they flipped out and they will just say higher headquarters. Why is the 76 or 476 only at 43%? And I didn't know. We can update it manually. So we ended up updating you to 100% manually. But that system does not take account for power outages, cell phone outages, internet outages, and it's maybe not the cure-all. So you did it old school, and I think that worked out good. At least you had text, but you had to do face-to-face and drive to people's houses to make sure they're okay. And that's phenomenal and old school and problem solving. Who tracked the accountability for the group?
Each of the squadron commanders did and then reported up, and then I reported it to you. So we distributed and delegated it down as best we could. But what we came up with as a major lesson from this was essentially agile combat ops, where we're doing the things that we've been talking about for years, but nobody really quite understands it until you see it, that you're going to be cut off from communication. And I'm going to ask you to do mission type orders and send you out for a week. And if you've got a device in your hand that emits, it can be located. And if it can be located, it can be targeted. And so we've got to understand that we're not going to have the communication suite that some of our young airmen have grown up and know nothing but. A lot of older experience in the reserves, and so we've got guys that remember old school alpha rosters and know how to run a face-to-face accountability drill. But some of our young folks have never been without a cell phone. And if we think that we're going to be carrying these things in actual large-scale combat operations where phones can be tracked and targeted, we're relying to ourselves.
And absolutely.
If senior leaders think that they're going to have the fidelity of information at their fingertips like we've had over the last 20 years of combat operations, absolutely will not. So it's the idea, hey, I know I'm going to send you on mission type orders, but when we actually cut the cord of communications, we realize we're not ready for it.
Yeah, how are the senior leaders going to react to not being able to get the information they want? Because it's always been the standard.
But it's also given us, we talked a lot about it while we were out and about and immediately applying these tactical lessons. So we got a taste of what we've been talking about. And the light bulb really started to come on in a lot of people's minds. Oh, this is what we're talking about. This is what we need to train to. And I started hearing the young crew chiefs and our logistics professionals start saying, we need to train to calm out. We need to take away our LMRs and our cell phones. And even if it's an hour or half a day or a full day, and we start building up to these types of operations, now we know what it really looks and feels like, and we can adapt to it. Because honestly, nobody had any relevant experience that they could actually put their finger on and touch and say, oh, that's what it's like. So that's one of the really good things that's coming out of this hurricane, was we're really going to adapt our FY25 training plan to start getting after that type of thing. Now that everybody understands what agile combat, decentralized autonomous operations really are.
Yep. Mission orders, people are going to have to make decisions when they're not used to making decisions and analyzing risk and mission control. Huge. You're paralleling a lot of stuff that we got at the ACC Commanders Conference.
Yeah, I think this is what separates us from a lot of our peer competitors, if you will, that are out there, is you got people that have just jumped in. I think you guys saw it firsthand down there is there's a lot of things that we can complain about, but we're at no shortage of great people that step up in times of need. And being able to challenge us and do these things, I think, are great lessons that you guys learned real world that you're going to be able to pass along to us, which will make all of the 442nd better, which will probably make all of AFRIC better. And we really appreciate like all of these stories that are coming out of there. But can you maybe highlight, and I know we're going to put you on a spot here, because I know that there's probably hundreds of people that you could talk about. Could you highlight maybe one or two that you're like, man, these people just way outside of their comfort zone or way outside of you? You already talked about Colonel Radican, and I've known him for a long time, and doesn't surprise me at all. But, and it doesn't surprise, I've known you for a while, and it doesn't surprise me that you would be one of the first ones to grab your gloves and a chainsaw or whatever you had and go. But anyone that maybe sticks out a little bit that you can share with us?
Yeah, Slobo was an absolute machine during this. I think for 2 weeks straight, he was always the first one on site working with it. But and I appreciate you giving me the caveat with it, because I don't know all of the stories that have come in yet. So the ones that I'm giving are based on some of the interaction I've had with folks, some of the stories that I have started to hear, but most of it is the firsthand when I was out there interacting with them. But the Billingsleys, Tracy and Devorah, they were out there every single day, and they were cutting people out of downed trees, moving stuff. When a call went out from the community, one of our local coaches was asking for help. They were there. Shireen Robinson was key in a lot of this, and she's actually tracking now. We're maintaining a list of people who still need help. Like, for example, the Swengrosses, 75% of the trees on their property are down, and they are responsible for clearing that. That's hundreds of trees that are down, and nobody's coming to do that for them. And just as an example, some of these companies that come out and clear a tree, they'll charge you thousands of dollars for one tree.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So it's a multi-month, if not year-long, endeavor for some of these folks to continue cutting out. Our comm guy, Mr. Atnip, he told a story about how he knew some people that were in a bad way back in one of the subdivisions by where he was, people that were almost about completely cut off and running out of supplies. And he happened to cross the Georgia National Guard as they were loading up, leaving from where they were for that day. And he asked if they would follow him and bring supplies to these people, hand delivering MREs and water to people. Mr. Atnip led that for it. Our tower controller, Mr. Tony Gunter, him and Ms. Susan Sutter and Christy Edmondson, but Tony is really involved with a outreach ministry called Living Bridges, and they were distributing food meals to the tune of about 300 per day. Wow. Breakfast and lunch, those were like burgers, chips, Pop-Tarts, that kind of stuff. And anybody that showed up, they would find out the number of families they were collecting for, and they would give them these sack lunches and sack breakfasts to take with them. But more than that, they were also giving them clothing. They had underwear donations for people, socks for people, magazines. So they're just little things to try to get the morale up. But even more so than that, because of what they were able to do, they were able to pull some of the harder hit folks from the community. And they didn't really advertise it because they didn't want to open the floodgates. But if people came to them and said, here, this is what I need, this is what my family needs, then a lot of cases they were able to work that out and get it to them. I highlight Mr. Gunter because both with him and with our interaction with the Georgia National Guard, we're setting up partnership opportunities for the future. Because one of the things that Tony talked to me about as he was showing me their ops and we were handing out lunches was that they really work with a lot of disadvantaged families, folks that are struggling with poverty, generational poverty in the community of Valdosta. And as he was talking, kind of light bulb popped on, and I said, you've got people you know that are struggling with generational poverty and they just can't get out of the rut. We've got an opportunity with the military to show them that there is another way out for us. I'm like, so let's reach out and let's find the youth, especially in that age group about 1 to 15, and let's get them to the base over drill. And maybe we get a few of them. Maybe it just shows people that they can talk to people out on the flight line, our crew chiefs, our back shops, and they'll meet people that look like them. They'll meet people that don't look like them. And they'll hear stories from every walk of life and realize, hey, you may not want this, but if you do, here's an option for you.
That's phenomenal. So you're basically recruiting during a disaster.
Yeah,
in a way.
Absolutely.
You know? Because you're meeting people that you don't normally interact with. And you realize that they're underexposed to service in the Air Force. That's phenomenal, Zero.
It's an option. And we have training opportunities now with the Georgia National Guard, the unit that was down, a field artillery unit. And so we started talking to them about, just while we're handing out MREs and ice, I'm like, hey, man, how long does it take you to set up, break, fire, and break down a field artillery? Because I'm thinking about how we engage with SDB now. And so he starts talking timelines. I'm like, you guys want to train together? We'll go up there. We'll take some A-10s. And he's like, you want to do some live fire training? I'm like, I would love to do some live fire
phenomenal.
Training. So just by the fact that they were there, we were there, we started seeing situations
it's sad that it takes a disaster to integrate with people that are underexposed to the military and recruit and work with a unit that's local, the National Guard. But obviously seeing those opportunities, Zero, is leadership and leading well. Hey, why don't you talk about the pods and how they were set up and what you guys were giving out? Because after obviously the initial dig out and accountability, you guys were to keep people busy and to keep people decent attitude for not being bored. You helped with a lot of pods. Why don't you talk through those?
It started off early on after the active duty cat stood back up after the first couple of days when we could start to move around the community again. And the statement came up in there, thinking about our messaging from the base, because what we didn't want it to look like was that Moody became a locked up fortress and maybe we had power, maybe we didn't, but we didn't want a negative public outlook to come from that the base was only concerned about itself. And so I offered up, why don't we start sending people out into the community if they're not being actively engaged on base with cleanup? And from that's where we started to get the, hey, this pod manager needs help for these shifts. And I picked that up for the reservists. The other active duty squadrons were getting that because the first pod we went to, like I said, we were working side by side with OSI and active duty security forces. But the way I understood it was the FEMA supplies already exist, and they're in these big trailers full of MREs and pallets of water and tarps. And then the fourth commodity that ended up getting delivered was just giant pallets of ice. So like the 5, 7, 10 pound bags that you get at the store.
Gotcha.
Imagine a 8 foot tall pallet of those bags.
Okay.
So these would get dropped off, and there were more than 5 pods. I remember specifically, because they had different organizations actually running them. There were 4 specifically in Valdosta, but there was also the one up in Ray City that Global and I went to that first time. There were more than those, but they were just giant pallets of the MRE boxes, the same kind of boxes we'd get downrange.
Right.
Civilian versions of those, the blue tarps for everybody to put across their roofs.
Water.
Imagine the same giant stacks of water that we saw downrange. We were moving around.
And you said these were run by counties?
Yeah, so there was a Lowndes County EMA officer who ran the first one. The second one of the later ones that we went to were run by different charitable organizations, but it's essentially all volunteers. So you might have one official emergency management rep, and everybody else showed up was a volunteer. Even food, the one we went up to up north, there was a local food truck serving barbecue, and they were just donating. Imagine you haven't really eaten that day, and you're already moving these heavy pallets, and this guy's cooking the most amazing barbecue you've ever smelled. So maybe that's why tempers were hot, but it was incredible to see what people were willing to do to help out.
Yeah, that is the theme here. So the supplies were pre-positioned by FEMA, and then you maybe had one EM pro set up with volunteers, these pods.
Yep. And then that was just around the Valdosta area, because we know there were more down south. But, like, here's some numbers just from the lounge pods that they gave. I think these numbers are pretty conservative. I think the actual numbers are higher just based on what it looked like we were moving during that. But they say in the roughly 2 weeks that the pods were run by volunteers that we distributed 86,628 bags of ice, 77,480 cases of water, 33,864 tarps, and 35,274 cases of MREs.
Cases of MREs, cases of water. Yeah, that's phenomenal. And that's just in the 2 weeks where the volunteers handled the pods. And then that's when FEMA personnel took over, 2 weeks after the storm, correct?
Yep. Yeah, and they've got a couple of distribution points and, like, rally points where you can go and you can get information. They can point you towards disaster relief.
That's what I was wondering, how you find out where these pods are at. Are there signs, but or just information set up, are sites that were pointing people in the right direction?
It was social media. That was the reliable form of information that we had. So there was a EMA Lowndes County Facebook page, the local residential area pages, the Moody Spouses page. All of these things just worked, and the idea was everybody was going to parrot all of the information. So you might see the same thing in five different sources, but that kind of made sure that we could really canvas the area and everybody really see it.
Got it. Hey, you finally got to fly. Were you the first day of flying? It wouldn't surprise me if you stepped up and got to fly first. When did you get to fly?
It was last Tuesday. So, yeah, it was pretty early back into operations. All of our sunshades are unusable. So all the airplanes are on the base ops ramp now.
Yeah, they're not like our hard structure sunshades. They're like awning sunshades, and they all blew down, basically. Yep. So they're gone.
So we took off, and obviously Grand Bay Range is unusable now. And they're also doing timber cutting operations there as well. But so the range is unavailable to us close on. Captain Kinney and I, so another reservist, we were going up to the Marine Corps airspace up at Townsend Range. And initially we flew out, we climbed up to 10,000 feet, and it's like the line from the original Star Wars. Hey, the damage doesn't look so bad from out here. But once when we came home, we dropped down lower, and that's when you could really see it. So flying above 10,000 feet, you look around, and you're like, oh, wow, the forests are still here. The community is still standing. Everything looks a lot better. But once you came down a little bit lower, below 5,000 feet, you could just see. And sometimes it didn't seem to make rhyme or reason. I'm sure there's terrain studies and reasons why the wind blew the way it did. But you would just see a swath of trees that are down. And it looked like the hand of God came down and just wiped them out. It looks pickup stick. It's unreal to see what that is. And sometimes you can see that the biggest gusts seem to follow rivers or come off of the lake. That's where you would see a lot of the really bad damage. But then it also, as you start to get closer back into Valdosta, you start to see all the blue tarps on roofs. And that's what really, it's like flying in Korea where everybody's got a blue roof, but now it's not because they painted it. It's because that's a tarp keeping the water out of their house. And it just takes your breath away, to be honest, that, but also to see some of the randomness in terms of what one area took a really bad hit, another area doesn't even look like there's a hurricane. But the other thing that's really noticeable now, and it'll probably be this way for months, is the haze. Everybody's burning all their debris.
Oh my word, okay. Makes sense now.
And so, like when we drive back from Atlanta, when we're up there for softball, we drive back and you can see where the haze starts. It almost comes up like a wall where people are starting to burn everything. And that's where the damage starts. And you can see where the winds started to fall off as the storm went further north. And as it was still gathering all the water, it ended up dumping on North Carolina.
Yeah, no joke.
And you can see the vegetation debris damage kind of ends. And from now, it's a lot like flying in Korea right now, with the haze that we would see back in the day. And that's just everybody out burning all of their debris, because like we saw after Hurricane Idalia, there's going to be trucks picking up this stuff for 6 or 7 months.
Crazy. Yeah.
And everybody was able to cut their trees, And the FEMA response, the county response is going to pay for the trucks that will come in and pick up all that debris. But everybody's responsible. Get all your own stuff chopped up and moved to the street, and then the trucks will eventually come get it. But a lot of people are just making these big piles, especially the folks that live out in the rural areas like the Swen Grosses. They're already making giant piles and just lighting them up and letting it go.
Crazy stuff. Zero, I'm going to let Chief have any last inputs before I wrap this up.
Yeah, I find it amazing just listening to you. One, listening to, hey, this temper started to flare and stuff. And I think we get in this world where we think we're really good at compartmentalizing stress. And something like this happens and we realize that there's no such thing, that it hits us hard. And I imagine you and your team, not just the physical, but emotionally at the end of those days, you guys were probably just wore out. And I wanted to say thanks on behalf of the airmen out there, on behalf of those that maybe didn't get to tell you things. Thanks for you and your team for stepping up and doing that. And then thanks for looking out for those around. And man, I love hearing that story of, hey, this is generational.
Absolutely.
Like if you could get out of this, we have an opportunity. I've had the privilege of listening to some of those stories at basic training, and I'll tell you, it's hard for me to keep a dry eye when I hear that those are the people that we're serving next to every day because of someone like you that inspired them or your team that was out there. And I know you well enough to know that you'd be like, that's my team. And you're right. It's you and your team led by a great leader that is inspiring people that may have just put something in their heads to where when we need an airman, maybe that airman steps up because of what you guys did down there. So thanks for that. And just thanks for sharing this story with us. And man, we continue to, I know me and my family, we're praying for you guys during this time, and we continue to pray for recovery. It sounds like it's going to be a long road. And I just hope to get down and shake some hands and,
yep,
and really tell people how much we appreciate them.
We're going to be down there in January.
Yep.
We talked about, hey, when did you go through training for this? Zero work bound. So that, hey, you were never trained for this, but you were, because the training resulted in leadership. Yeah. And that's what you did. You had the right attitude and you led by example and you led a team. You led well down there from the night of September 26th to Thursday, getting the airplanes back on the 15th of October, it being the 29th and still power lines down in the area. We got an email today that they stopped or terminated the stop movement at Moody Air Force Base. So they're barely situationally recovered that they can take the new inbounds. This is a month and a little bit later, and point out to what happened in North Carolina, because that hurricane blew through you and then dumped up in the mountains of North Carolina. So they've gone through some things maybe different than you, maybe not wind, but flooding and huge damage. I'm looking at a picture that you sent me the day after, and it almost trivializes. It's a joke, obviously, but I'm looking on the wall of the 76th Fighter Squadron and the damage that they incurred. And it says 76 FEHER Squadron, because the G and the T in fighter got blown away. So have you issued a reward for them finding the G or the T by any chance?
They found them. I got to go look to go see if they put them up. I know last week they were in the main desk. But
got it. I'm glad they found them. I need a before and after on that. That's a joke, because obviously the damage was significant, and you led well. And that's part of what I like to say almost every time I get in public and speak is lead well, and thank you for doing it. Here are the three things I pulled from this. Zero, at every step of the way, is recruiting and drawing tactical lessons from a hurricane. And that's my first point. Another thing that I'll point out is I'm flipping through the text between you and I, and there's this big red text, and it looks like you unsubscribed from the Hurricane of the Month Club. I can understand that. And what I would say is you led well, but you have people that you enabled to lead, and they led well as well. So that's my number two. And my last and final comment is Slobo is a machine. And he certainly is. But you know what? Zero, thanks to everybody down there, every airman from the commanders to the youngest airman that helped the 476th fighter group is a machine. And that's what I think. And I'm real proud of you guys. I wish you didn't have to do this, but you shined when things were tough. And it's not combat, it's civic. And it just shows the quality of the airmen in our unit. All right, so you got the final words.
It's easy to lead when you got a great team. And being out in the field, side by side. That's who I am. I can't sit in the Pentagon and push papers. When I played football, I was a lineman. I got to be in the trenches. That's my thing. And if I'm going to lead, I'm going to lead from the front. But it's easy when you got a team that is firing on all cylinders. I was blown away to watch them. I wish I could just go name by name down everybody in this fighter group, because here's our pilots with chainsaws and somebody that's not even in the unit yet, and they're out there clearing 1,300 cubic feet of debris from his house while he's downrange fighting. And they did that every day. They were the roving chainsaw gang going around clearing people's yards, and people with their brand new excavators, and they're out there moving trees and chainsaws from our pro supers that they're not directing the line, they're directing recovery. If you don't see it firsthand, it's impossible to describe it. And every member of the Vanguard proved what Ding Hao really means in terms of being the best. And I couldn't be more proud to be a part of this organization. And I appreciate everything that y'all do for the wing, to giving us the autonomy to lead the way that we need to down here. So we will rebuild. I think the worst part, maybe it's karma, that about 2 years ago when a hurricane did not happen and a stop sign blew over.
I remember that one.
I said, Moody will rebuild. Now we have to rebuild for real.
So that was Custer's joke.
Yeah, maybe should not have been so flippant back in the early days, because the real storms are coming. But they're amazing folks here.
Yep. Hey, Zero Man, absolutely Ding Hao, man. Softball season's over. Write this down.
It never ends.
That's your problem. Yeah. Why don't you take some time and try to jot this down? You're a good writer. Let's get a diary going, because you don't want to forget this, because it was not normal and it was proud to be a Vanguard. All right, Zero, thanks for your time. We'll be down there in January to talk to people face to face, Chief and I.
Yeah, awesome, boss. Looking forward to it.
All right, Zero, thanks so much.